one.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 49 of the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. I'm your host, Gary Temple Bodley. Today it's September 24th, 2016. This week we had a few questions from parents and grandparents about their children and grandchildren. What can they do to help these children who seem to be struggling? All parents worry about their children, and they want them to be happy, but what can they do to make life better or easier for their kids? Should they jump in and try to fix things, or should they just let them figure it out on their own? This week's question comes from Sue. Her grandson doesn't want to eat anything, and this is causing chaos in their household. Let's hear what Joshua has to say about this. On the roundtable today, we have Steve Finizza. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary.
Michael Cutson. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Gary.
And Kyla Hinton. Hi, Kyla.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, everyone.
Hey.
Hey. You know that I think that may be the first time you ever pronounced my last name properly.
You know, I have had this like issue with pronouncing your name because it sounds like Cutson. It's spelled Cutson.
No, it's not. I don't know why people always butcher my last name. It rhymes with the Hudson River.
Cutson.
That's right.
Very good. See how easy that is? That's all you had to do was tell me, but you told me that the first time too.
And the third time, and the fifth time, and that's all right. It's all good.
And Steve Finizza. Did I pronounce that right, Steve?
Like pizza.
Like pizza.
And Kyla Hinton? Hinton? What is that?
That's
Does
funny.
Anyone ever mispronounce your name, Kyla?
Not my last name. Everybody
How about
calls
your
me
first name?
Everybody calls me Kayla. I just answer to it.
Kayla. Is there an A in there somewhere?
No, I mean, there's an A at the end, but people, right. When they look at it, they, I guess their minds just fill it in, and yeah. I'm just like, whatever.
Oh, that's weird.
The A fine. is not silent, it's invisible.
The other day, somebody seriously said to me, I can't remember what it was, a guy, like an AT&T guy or something, and I told him my name, and he was like, oh, that's a weird, or I spelled it, and he's like, that's a weird way to spell Kayla. I was like, no, because it's
You're right,
Kyla.
That is a weird way to spell Kayla. That's why it's not
God.
Kayla.
Yeah.
So, my last name is pronounced Bodley.
Rhymes with Godley.
Right? And my dad used to say, anyone who pronounces the name Bodley is a complete moron, is uneducated, is the lowest form of life on earth, and you should never trust them. And
oh,
then
shit.
I go to research the name, and the name is Bode, which means spear, B-O-D-E, and Lee, L-E-I-G-H, which is a thicket of woods, and it's supposed to be Bodley. Bodley. And there's a library in Oxford or Cambridge, whatever, it's the Bodleian Library. It's not the Bodleian Library, and that's certainly Bodley. So
I prefer to think of you as godly.
Godly? Bodley, godly, right? It's godly.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we actually have a lot of influence on our names prior to being born. Yeah. And I always thought that Temple was like a super weird middle name, and I never used to tell anyone about it, ever. And now I like it. Now it seems to fit.
I think that's such a cool middle name.
Yeah, me too.
It's super weird, and nobody knows where it came from, and nobody knows why I got that name. My dad says, I don't know why you have that name. Isn't that funny?
Wasn't he around when you were named?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's what I'm trying to say is I think that we choose our names from the non-physical. Yeah. Our first names, our first and middle names. And
our last names.
And our last names, because we're choosing our parents, right?
Right.
All right. Did you guys see, what was the show on? Oh, I was watching this really cool documentary on this. It was about reincarnation, and it's about this group of researchers at some pretty prestigious university who have been studying these kids who believe they have these past life experiences. And he's been doing it for 25 years or something, and they have 2,500 kids that they are would say is in a probability that they could recall their past life were a 9 or a 10. And they did this story about this one kid, you may have seen, he was on 60 Minutes, where as a baby, he would talk about airplanes and everything, and he, you know, was fascinated with airplanes as a little kid, and at the age of 4 or something, he was able to say tell his parents, you know, that he was shot down in a plane and the Japs shot him down. And he knew the name of his aircraft carrier. He knew the name of his friends who were on the aircraft carrier. He said when he died, he was met by three friends that had died, also named them by name, and all this stuff. So he's like this 10 out of 10 case. It's super interesting. But anyway, so he was saying that he told his parents that he saw them in this hotel that they were in Hawaii, in this pink hotel, and he knew that they would be perfect parents for him.
Hmm.
Yeah, really cool. But a lot of other stuff in that, too. It's a really good documentary. I forgot what it's called, though. But it's on pay-per-view now if you want to watch it.
Wow, Pink Hotel. That's amazing.
Oh, we have a skeptic in our midst.
No, that was a joke. That was a poor joke amazing things that I was focusing on a pink hotel. A little, okay. All right. It wasn't so obvious, I guess.
No, I guess it wasn't obvious. Did anyone get it?
No.
Okay, of the 6 million people listening to the show, someone write in and let us know if you got that
joke. And let us know if anyone got that joke. I was not at all being skeptical. I was trying to inject some humor into it. Okay. Oh, well.
I'm sure there are some listeners who appreciate him more.
Just like that kid heard.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
No comment.
Johnny Carson used to do that all the time when his jokes bombed.
So let's go to do the quote, because this episode's about children. And so I thought this was a good quote. We've used it before, but...
Yes. Your perspective that you are the parent, that you have experienced more of life and therefore you know what's better for your child, is a flawed premise. Your child was born with a level of understanding that is far beyond your comprehension.
Well, how about that?
I believe it.
Yeah. So the idea is that children... Okay, so the Earth has a vibration, and we're a perfect match to the vibration of the Earth when we're born. And the Earth's vibration keeps increasing, and ours does too, but we don't really catch up. And that's why older people reminisce about the good old days, or think about the music of the old days, or think about cars they had back then. And they're sort of like caught in this time, whereas the kids today are born into this environment that's, you know, at much higher vibration, and they are actually are a higher vibration than we are. And the perspective really should be that they are the parents and we are the children. And they are the ones who know more about what's going on now than we do. We just think we do, and that's the illusion of it all.
This one throws me...
Kyla, do you think we should let our kids raise us?
I mean, it throws me for a loop, because I feel like I do know cognitively that it's true, but I'm still sort of stuck in the old approach to life. So I'm in this weird limbo with my kids where I do believe that they have their own inner guidance. I do believe that they are fully capable of deciding what is best for themselves, but it's really hard to let go and let them do that.
Yeah.
So, well, but I also think that they, you know, because they choose us as their parents, they are also looking for us to provide guidance.
I think they're looking for us to keep them from dying.
Right. That's exactly. They're looking for you to give them food, give them a place to sleep, and keep them from dying. Otherwise, stay the hell out of their way.
But we're going to get to this with this letter with what this kid's eating.
Right.
Whether it's poisoning the kid.
Right. Which we will get to it.
Yeah.
Because it's a point of view that you can have that you think that the kid's doing something wrong, but it's only because your perspective is so limited you can't see how it's all going to turn out. We'll briefly talk about what's happening here. But this kid has a very limited diet, right? And when I was a kid, all I ate was bologna and tuna. That was it. I couldn't eat anything else. And my parents took me to a doctor, and the doctor said, "Is he dying?" And my mom said, "No." Then what are you worried about? You know, he'll be fine. And of course, I was fine.
That's pretty advanced.
I was I was the same.
That was weird maths, but I mean, she attracted the right doctor at the right time.
I was the same, and my mom just made me a separate meal. She just made me spaghetti with butter. I used to eat that all the time.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you think about coming from non-physical to physical, probably the weirdest part of physical is eating.
Right.
And that's why kids have such a hard time eating, because it's just such a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
And everything really is an acquired taste.
And an acquired texture.
An acquired texture.
Yeah.
Right? And, so I think.
Well, my daughter now in college is having to broaden her horizons a bit.
That's how it happens. Yeah.
she used to be a very picky eater. She still is. And she's gone vegetarian, which is not the easiest thing to do when you're on a food plan. She texted Wendy this week. She said, "Mom, I'm loving college, but I really miss New York pizza."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's missing pizza, and she's missing bagel. You know, really good bagels.
Yeah. Mm.
If you go on the internet,
good things. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just going to say that, you know, I think we get sometimes wrapped up in this whole physical reality, like it's real.
Right. Right.
And if you take a certain perspective, there's actually a group of people, and I know of one directly, who they're called breatharians, that don't eat. They just live off what they call the energy, the chi of the world, so to speak. And, you know, they can go years without eating. So that, I think, alone would prove that it's really not... It's more your belief about what you're eating what you're doing than anything else. So it's
and I think Bashar says that they don't eat, do they?
I don't recall. You mean the alien that he is?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably not. That you'd have to pack more shit in your spaceship. I mean, that would just slow you down, right? And then you got, well, we won't go into.
Don't they have a replicator like on Star Trek?
I would assume. I would just assume.
Well, I believe
nerds.
I believe there was a Catholic saint who went without food, and I remember reading the autobiography of a yogi, and I believe there was a Hindu saint who lived at the time of Paramahansa Yogananda, who also allegedly went without food.
Yeah. Well, the friend that I have said she stopped because everybody just thought she was too weird, you know. She always had to explain herself, and you know, it's a lot of social situations where you sit down and eat, so it just got to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah, but how was her health while she wasn't eating?
Fantastic.
That's
it was fantastic health and energy and all sorts of good stuff. I want to do it. It's on my list.
Me too. Let's do it.
I'm going to do it for like a couple months.
Can I have wine while I don't eat?
I fully support that.
If you believe it is, that it works.
I fully support. Mm-hmm. We're going to come up with the Venezia diet.
No, I want the Steve Pizza diet.
Yeah, sign me up for that.
Well, I haven't since writing the Joshua diet book. I've just naturally gone through this diet that is almost no carbs or no simple carbs, nothing processed at all, no bread, which we used to eat bread every night, no pizza. I used to make pizza twice a week with my own dough. And I eat like once a day now, and I'll have two shakes. And I feel great, and I'm lost 10 pounds and have tons of energy, way more energy than I had before.
On your way.
It's fantastic. Yep. But it's just naturally happened, and that's just – what I was inspired to do, and it's working out great. So I think that this whole idea that we have about food that's been, you know, instilled in us, eating three times a day since we're kids and having to eat this certain, you know, vegetable, potato, meat on a plate, I think that is a way of looking at food that might be going away.
Well, weightlifters and athletes often go to multi-meals.
Yeah, many meals, right?
Yeah, many smaller meals.
Smaller meals.
Many small meals, right. Yeah, there's one big, gigantic meal at the end of the day. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I think it's just for fun, but it's not really, you know, it just makes you drowsy, if anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I won a poker tournament last night. Oh.
Yeah, it was fun.
How big? There was
130 people, something like that. And mm-hmm. Maurice Hawkins, who is one of the top poker players in the world, who lives in the area but never comes because, you know, he's just winning huge tournaments. And his wife wanted to come and play at the nighttime one, so he came to the daytime one. And he's just an amazing poker player. And so it came down to the three of us, and we ended up chopping at the end. But it was so fun. It was incredible.
So what was your take?
$2,000.
Very nice.
So I'm up to $11,000 this month in poker. 27,000 in unexpected business, so it's a $38,000 month. And I owe it all to Kyla and the Abundance Meditation, which we listen to every day. Except today we listen to the Joy one. Did you finish Fix the Joy one? Because that seemed like it was fixed.
Yeah, I think
it was really
Are you looking in the folder?
Yeah, it's in the folder.
Yeah, I've fixed the Abundance one, too, because I sent it out to the people on Facebook. I just haven't uploaded it, so I will.
Oh, good. Upload that one, yeah.
I will.
So Abundance is available on CD Baby. I think we're going to be one of the highest-selling tracks of meditations from CD Baby in the last week. I think we're going to break some kind of record there.
I think you're right.
We have a list of the top abundance meditation videos or CDs or tracks. We should be in the top 10 of that.
I would bet we are.
Get them on play on YouTube. That's where I go for a lot of meditations. YouTube.
YouTube, yeah. Mm-hmm. We can put it on YouTube. Yeah, one day we'll do that.
All right.
And iTunes, too. iTunes, it came out on iTunes for $9.99, which is a deal.
A bargain.
You know, you figured it was supposed to be 99 cents, but somehow it came in at $9.99.
What are the odds?
But still, it is a deal at $9.99 because, you know, you could make, you could attract, say, $38,000 for one simple $9.99 payment.
By purchasing it, you're acknowledging your abundance. You're saying, I'm all for that, $10.
$10 is certainly worth it.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Go to CD Baby. For the low economical price of $2.99, it's all yours. Or wait for it to come out for free on YouTube someday.
Someday.
Or do something on Facebook. A couple of people got it for free because they shared our posts or our page or something on Facebook.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I saw that really nice note from the lady that won her download. Yeah, that's
Pamela.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Pamela.
Hi, Pamela.
Back to the kid eating subject, my best friend Bruce was 47 when he had his first child, and Grayson.
But was it natural birth or C-section for him?
Not for him. He actually didn't deliver. Should I say, what do you say for a man? Do they don't have a child?
Had a child.
Have a child, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, and but he's the youngest 47-year-old you'll ever see. I mean, he's in perfect condition and thinks like a kid and acts like a kid and has fun with kids, and so it's great. Anyway, Grayson doesn't.
So did Anthony Weiner this week.
Hmm?
What's that?
Never mind.
Is this another one of the?
I was making an Anthony Weiner joke.
Did you see that documentary?
No, he got in big trouble. Apparently, he was sexting with a 15-year-old.
Did you see the documentary, the Anthony Weiner documentary?
Just heard something about it. I haven't seen it.
It's absolutely fantastic. It's probably one of the best documentaries ever. It's incredible.
I want to see it.
Oh, you should see it. It's the film crew is going around right in the middle of this. He's trying to run for mayor, and it's in the middle of this controversy, and he's still married and his wife's dealing with it, and they're filming everything the moment he's going through it. And at one point the camera guy goes, I can't believe you're letting us film this, something like that. But he is such an impressive guy, but just has this one work, you know. Nothing wrong with that, absolutely. Mm-mm. If you want to sex people, that's fine with me, and he would be a great leader.
Not 15-year-olds.
If there's no wrong, I'm not saying everybody should go out and have sex with a 15-year-old, but
he's a going to jail.
Yeah. Anyway, mm-hmm. it's a great How do we get on Anthony Weiner? Oh, 15-year-olds. Okay. Anyway, we're back on my friend, Mariana's son, Grayson, who also doesn't eat anything. And this is a really healthy, organic family. And so they just pretty much, you know, steer him in directions. But he's really down to maybe, you know, 5 or 6 things that he'll eat. And they work around it. And they know that he'll grow into other foods as he gets older. When he was a little baby, it was, you know, 2 years old. It was like one thing he ate the whole time.
Hmm.
Should we get into this question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Let me pull it up. Sorry. Okay. Dear Josh. Excuse me. Dear Josh. Okay.
She's having problems with this letter. Go ahead.
It's too close to home. Okay. Dear Joshua, I have an 8-year-old grandson. He has always been extremely active and exceptionally good at all sports. He currently plays soccer, football, and baseball, usually two sports going at one time. He is also breezing through school academically, loves learning, and from what the teachers tell us, is a wonderful student. He seems to have endless energy. Why I am writing is that he basically lives on plain pasta with butter, occasional pizza, he only likes one kind, and one particular juice, so pretty much white flour with the perhaps once a week chicken nuggets from McDonald's. One-on-one, he can be a lot of fun, but when there are more of us in the room, he seems to get a bit wild, being loud and just not fun to be around. He typically comes to my home after school, where my daughter and his younger brother spend the afternoon. His dad works nights, so he can sleep a bit during the day. I'm running my business until about 3 p.m., so I come home shortly after he comes home from school. I love the fact that I get to see my grandchildren daily, and I also would love to come home to a somewhat peaceful and fun experience. There tends to be a lot of yelling, trying to get him to eat and be nice. It seems clear that he needs to eat something, but he just doesn't want to eat, except perhaps ice cream, but he will agree to the pasta first. I pretty much leave all this up to my daughter, knowing this is her experience with her child, but it ends up in my house. I'm amazed at how much he can manage living on so little. I always say he lives on air. Maybe his food intake has nothing to do with his bad attitude after school, and mind you, it's fleeting and not all the time, but enough to be writing this. I want to have happy experiences with my grandson rather than upheaval, so I'd like to see all this differently. I want to bring out the best in him, because like I say, one-on-one, he is fun. He has a great sense of humor, is enthralled with swear words, which we work on curbing. He has a younger brother who is 2 and just learning to talk. Abraham always says we are a chemical factory, and we can manage to get whatever we need from food, and he seems to get something energizing out of what little he eats. If he was a bit more pleasant on his empty stomach, then this would be fine. But the turmoil seems to be tied to the not eating. I would greatly appreciate your wisdom on this. Thank you so much for doing what you do. Love, Sue.
Very good. Okay, Michael.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
Alrighty.
Pull it back, pull the letter back up. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Dear Sue, we will start with the premise that everything is right and everything is happening for you and everything is happening for you, not to you. If you accept this premise, which is a basic fact of the universe, then you can begin to see your grandson's behavior, as well as the behaviors of all people, as right, not wrong. There is no wrong anywhere in the universe, and your grandson and his eating preferences, including his diet, are not wrong either. The only problem here is everyone's resistance to what is actually happening. Because you, your daughter, and others see it as wrong, you bring up conflict, struggle, and tense conditions. It is not wrong. He is fine.
Okay. So, they look at the child who's eating something different or less than they think it should be. They think it's wrong, so they dip into a lower emotional state of being, and from that state, they receive thoughts and ideas to try to get them out of that state. Not to help the kid. All they're really trying to do is make themselves feel better by having the kid eat normally. If the kid ate normally, they think they would feel better, right? Mm. So they're trying to change the conditions that exist so that they can feel better. and they're, but if they could just see what was happening as all right, then they would begin to feel better. And then they would get inspiration for other ideas, like, maybe, I don't know, it could be whatever it could be, just other inspirational ideas that might change something. But they don't even need to change anything because everything's right.
I found that when I like let go, and if my kid just wants to eat three bowls of applesauce, if I can just let go, then I've been in a situation before where I like went back and opened up the pantry and I saw something else in there and he was willing to eat it, you know, when I just let go. And yeah. I was like, fine, just eat your applesauce, you know, and then right. I just happened, and then he just happens to be open to it. So, I don't know, sometimes.
Okay, so what's the bad part about him eating three bowls of applesauce?
Diarrhea?
Sugar? Too much sugar, right?
Diarrhea. Yeah.
Well, I know. If there's a physical issue that you know is a problem with it, like throwing up or something, right. then I can see, right? But if there's no physical or getting all jacked up on the sugar,
right?
Maybe that's.
I also have beliefs. Like my mom was really big on protein. Like it's important to have protein. So when he doesn't eat protein, I feel like he's going to be like lacking something, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, he could easily be a vegetarian.
Right.
You know, or get by on a lot less meat like most of humans did for all eons, right? Yeah. No one's eating steaks when they're in the 1400s in England living on potatoes, right?
Or lamb or goats.
Goats would be like a once a month feast, you know? They wouldn't be eating goat every day. They'd be eating that once a month. What about if you lived in Japan up to 100 years ago? You're eating some fish, some seaweed, and mostly vegetables.
It sounds good.
Yeah,
it sounds good, right?
Yeah. But what if the child instead were a teenage girl who was bulimic?
Well, that's a completely different issue. And it has nothing to do with eating. Eating is a side effect of that issue, right? That's a worthiness issue, like most things are.
So are you saying how does one deal with that as a parent?
Don't give a bulimic person food, different types of food, hoping that they will gain weight. You work on the worthiness issue and the self-identity issue and all that stuff. The food and the eating and the weight loss are symptoms of something else.
Right.
This isn't even a problem. You know, there's no problem here. The kid's running around in school, healthy, good at school, good in sports, doing all this stuff. There is no problem other than there's chaos going on at the house because everyone's struggling to get the kid to eat and he doesn't want to eat. He doesn't want to be different than he is. Everyone's trying to make him different than he is and he doesn't want to be different than he is. And so he's putting up resistance and the parents are putting up resistance and it's, you know.
Right. Well, in this case, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
I just want to point out, in this case, there is no problem, and as hard as it might be to accept, in the case of a 15-year-old who's bulimic, there's apparently no problem there either, according to Joshua, because that's part of that 15-year-old's path, and everybody who has encountered her, my best friend, like in high school and college, was, I don't know, had all kinds of issues around that, and it affected me to a great extent, and like, I learned a lot about myself in the process, and so... Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that you, at a certain point, just figure out that you have to step back and let that person do what they're going to do and be who they're going to be.
Which is hard for a parent to do.
Yes.
That's not happening on my watch.
You're going to jump in there and try and fix the thing. Yeah.
And make yourself miserable and maybe them
but
too.
But part of that child's path. I mean, thank God that's not a problem with my children. But had it been, I can assure you, my wife and I would be looking for every expert because part of that child's path is to be under our care during their minority.
I think the real difficulty here is for us looking at someone else's issue and saying, what would we do if we were in that issue? But the problem is that we're not in that issue. We're not designed for that issue. That issue isn't for us, right? This issue is for Sue, the grandmother, for the mother, for the kid. It's for them, and they are prepared to deal with it, where we aren't, and so we see the whole situation as something that should be fixed, and no matter what the issue is, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have a bulimic child, and you, as a parent, this is happening for you, too. There's something that you need to get out of this, something your kid needs to get out of it, and you either resist it, or you go with it, But we can't look in on that and say what we would do because we don't have that thing. Like, for instance, Michael, you're afraid of being homeless, right? But that just isn't for you in this experience. And so when you look at a homeless person, you just cannot see how that could work, right? You just see it as the worst possible thing in the world. While the homeless person is ready for it. They've come here to explore this, and to a lot of them, you might say that, well, it's mental problems and all this stuff, but to a lot of them, that experience of being homeless is very freeing. It's a very lot less stressful than they're trying to pay bills and live in society and be a normal person, you know. So that's the danger here in us from the outside looking in on these situations saying, you know, somebody should do this differently.
Well,
did I get on a soapbox?
Yeah.
was that too much?
No, yeah. It was perfect.
Although some homeless people clearly, you know, clearly want to be in a better situation and are seeking it, and maybe they came to experience this so that they could get to where, you know, so that they could get to where they want to eventually be.
That's the whole point of all these experiences. Exactly right. Okay, next paragraph. Mm-hmm.
You chose your parents and the time and place of your birth because you knew it would launch you on a trajectory toward what you came here to explore. Your daughter chose you and your grandson chose your daughter and his father. You also chose your body because you wanted the specific aspects of your body, knowing it would help you live the life you intended to live. Your grandson chose his body as well, along with the sports and academic abilities. He also chose to view food in a unique way. Why? You are living... Oh, sorry, I can't see it right now. You are living... Oh, okay. You are living the reason right now. It's creating desires. It's launching him on a trajectory. It's all working out perfectly. He's thriving. The only issue is the conflict and stress related to something others believe is wrong with him. But nothing is wrong.
I chose my mother because she was literally the worst cook in the world. And this launched me on this trajectory towards being a great cook. And that's one of my passions. And I discovered it when I was maybe 8. And I've been cooking my own meals since about the age of 8 or 9. And then when she moved out and I was 13, then I cooked and my dad cooked and pretty much the both of us and sometimes my brother cooked every meal together. And thank God for that. You know, you look back on this and maybe my dad's mother might say, Keita should be cooking better or you should learn to cook or blah, blah, blah. But it was actually the perfect thing for me. Also, my parents splitting up was the perfect thing for me too.
Hmm.
Yeah. Right. Interesting.
Yeah, unique.
Okay.
Okay. Next paragraph. You have an inner self. Your inner self is fully aware of you. When you look at something and feel negative emotion, it is guidance from your inner self. You are looking at the subject in a resistant way and are not perceiving it from the higher perspective. Your perspective is limited because you cannot know how this will all unfold. You assume it's a bad thing, but in all reality, it's a good thing. One day you will see that, but for now, you must have faith.
Okay.
Because you got to have faith.
That's yes. Really true. You have to have faith because you can't see how it's all going to unfold. You have to imagine that things are set up for a reason and that one day in the future or from a higher perspective, you can look back on this and see how it all worked out. You know, same with me as a kid, not eating anything or not, you know, my mother not being able to cook and things like that. And it all worked out perfectly as it is now.
I was just having a conversation with somebody and he was saying, well, yeah, but he has no fear. And I said, maybe it's not that he doesn't have any fear, but that he just has faith that he'll get what he wants no matter what happens.
Who has no fear?
Oh, a person that we were talking about in our conversation.
Well, having no fear is something like having confidence, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have confidence, you have a lack of fear. And if you have, if you're not confident, you have just a little too much fear. get rid of the fear or reduce the intensity of the fear, and the confidence naturally comes forward. Do you feel...
Have love.
Well, right. So there's love on one side and fear on the other side. As you move towards love, you move away from fear, or fear is less of a factor. Kyla, do you feel more confident now than you have in a while, or...
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just basically because you've been able to look at irrational fear in a different way and realize what it was and lower the intensity of it on purpose by finding proof that it was false.
Right, like charging into it head first. And then when you get to the other side, it's impossible not to feel more confident.
Yeah. And it's exhilarating to push through these little fears and do these things and then, you know, not care what people think and do the best you can and knowing that whatever happens, happens for a reason. And if someone perceives something you say as inappropriate, well, that's really their issue, not your issue, right? And they needed to hear it. And I think a lot of things that we say are sort of given to us to say at the right time, to the right person. We had a, while we were playing poker last night, we had a very cool situation. There was like five of us left. And at that time of the poker tournament, everyone's made the money and everyone's giddy and we're having fun. And the tournament director, Bobby, says, I'm proud of you guys for making the final five. And Marie says, I don't want people to say they're proud of me, because you can only say you're proud of someone from this, you know, higher place, looking down at someone, right? Mm. Like, I didn't expect you to be here. That's why I'm proud of you, right? You can be proud of yourself, but when it's someone else, and it's got this whole conversation going where, yeah, really, if you should be there, if you're, you know, if that's, like, you're good enough to be there, you should be there, and it should just be, that's the natural next step. That's the logical conclusion, not that I'm proud of you for somehow getting lucky enough to get there.
But you know what? But that was his limiting perspective on that statement. You could be proud of somebody because of what and who they are, including their accomplishments, and including whether or not they accomplish.
Yep.
You know, I tell my kids I'm proud of them no matter what. That I will always show them off. That I will always view them as beacons of light in my life.
Right.
So how interesting is it though that this guy who doesn't want to. People to tell him that they're proud of him because it makes him feel somewhat inferior. There he is feeling good, and then out of nowhere, here comes somebody telling him that they're proud of him. I don't know.
It's not that it makes him feel inferior. It's sort of like, you know, who are you to be proud of me for something that I've done on my own? I should be here. It's sort of like when someone gives you advice that you don't haven't asked for, they're looking at you in a... like you need advice, like you need help, like you're in a needy situation, like you're not capable of doing it on your own, so they're going to tell you how to fix things. Right? From this up on high, they can see your problem. And so that was his point, was when someone outside said something like that. Now, of course, parents are a whole different situation because you want your parents to be proud of you. But in this case, it was the you know, someone outside. And so his wife comes over and said, aren't you proud of Maurice for being a friend? She knows better than to say that. To me.
No, I'm ashamed of him.
Here, right?
Yeah.
But
that's cool.
Anyway, yeah, you can look at it both ways. I thought this was an interesting perspective. But what was interesting was that Bobby would even say that out. And I think that he was inspired to say it so that it could launch this really cool conversation that everyone had.
Right. So.
And now it's this running joke that we're going to have forever. We're proud of each other for being in the final table. Okay,
we're proud
let's go to the next paragraph.
You got it. Imagine that you knew how this would all work out. Imagine that he uses his specific diet to create something wonderful. Imagine that the result of this very specific aspect of his unique body causes him to pursue some passion. What if you knew that now? You would have no resistance around it. There would be no yelling to get him to do something different, because you know what is to come. In fact, you would look on and marvel at how the creation process works.
Okay, so this is interesting. So do you guys know the company Garden of Life? Protein powders and supplements and all that?
Nope.
No.
Okay, so Jordan Rubin is the founder of it, and he nearly died from a digestive disease. And from that, he created this whole new way of eating and the Maker's Diet. He created the Maker's Diet and became a big phenomenal and then started this company. Now, had he not gone through that issue, this company would not exist. So if you could see in the future how these things that you're challenged by when you're a kid can launch you in the direction of what you came here to explore, then you wouldn't think that anything was wrong. You know, you would know that somehow this is for him and he's going to get something out of it. But if you fix the problem, then do you delay the path?
Are you saying that there's a problem? Are you saying there's a problem?
No, I'm saying if you fix what you think is a problem.
Right?
If you see it as a problem and then you try and fix it because you don't, because it makes you feel bad and you want to change how you're feeling about it, so you've changed this whole condition. Now, what happens then? Does the path of the person change? Or does it get delayed? Does something stronger have to happen?
I don't know.
Come on, Steve. You know.
I think there's 1,000 different pathways.
Yeah, there's 1,000 different pathways.
Millions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next paragraph.
If you didn't think it was wrong, you would not have a problem. So then, think of it as right. Think of the yelling as part of the creation process. Think of your daughter's struggles as part of the process. I am having problems seeing today. Okay.
Look on and wonder.
Thank you. Look on and wonder as it unfolds, as it all unfolds perfectly. There need be no stress, but you cannot create in the lives of others. And if your daughter chooses to maintain her resistance, you cannot see that as wrong either. It is all right, every last bit of it.
So you can, as a grandmother, have this perspective that it's all going to work out, that, and you can watch it as a spectator, as a curious spectator, looking to see how this aspect molds this relationship and this child and this mother and all this thing. But you can't, you can change your perspective, but you can't really change your daughter's perspective on it because she's going through a whole different thing. Sue, you know, is understanding the law of attraction and universal forces and is reading Joshua and has asked Joshua a question. And so she's on a completely different vibrational level than someone who is not aware of these, you know, the reality of physical reality. So she's from a totally different vibration, and she wants her daughter possibly to see it from her point of view as well so that her daughter will find relief. But you can't really do anything about that because the daughter has to go through what she's going through.
Yeah. This is something my mom was really good at, like being supportive but detached, you know, when especially when we were living with her. She let me be the parent, and even when she didn't maybe necessarily agree with how I was handling things, and then she was always just there for me after, you know, after I, like, yelled, and then everybody cried.
That's right.
She was just there to listen and only gave advice if I asked for it, and even then it was very non-judgmental. So that's what Sue can do for her daughter, just not stress out about it, not let it affect her her vibration at all, and just be there for the kid and her daughter when they need her.
Even though it's chaos in her house, she can take the perspective that this is, you know, interesting thing to pay attention to and watch, and it's not really any problem. It's just that there's resistance going on.
And maybe she'll even miss it one day. That's what Joshua tells me will happen.
Yep.
That's what
a lot of people don't, you know, live near enough to their grandchildren to watch them go through things like this. So you look at that from that point of view too. It's a blessing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to the last one.
If your grandson needed to eat differently so that he could be launched on a trajectory toward that which he came here to explore, he would be eating differently. Because he is different than you, you feel fear. The fear is irrational. You can see that he is doing well. Whatever comes as a result of such a specific thing during childhood is meant to be. You can relax in the knowledge that it is for the highest good of the child, his mother, and even you. After all, you got to ask us a question. Without this condition, there would not be this question, our answer. I'm sorry, I can't see.
Or our answer. Was actually a typo there.
Oh, okay. Without this condition, there would not be this question or our answer, which will surely help others as well. With all our love, we are Joshua.
So even the question is a positive benefit of this situation, because now the question was created out of non-physical into physical, and all those who are receiving the question of the week will read it, and all those who go to the website will read it, and could be in a book one day, and it could be, you know, always be on the website for people to read. So just the question is one tangible positive outcome of this situation.
Yeah, it helped
many
me.
Others that came like that. Yeah.
Right.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve, did anything weird strange happen to your kids when they were growing up? Did they go through any stages that launched them on trajectories towards things?
God, I wish I could come up with something here, but it was like the probably the biggest thing was my trajectory was changed because my son, we got into battles about him doing his homework.
Yeah.
And he was pretty pretty tough for an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
And I gave in because I preferred loving on him than feeling angry when I looked over and he wasn't doing the things I thought. And I thought, well, if all this spiritual shit is really true, then I don't need to be worried about his grades, you know, and stuff like that. It was kind of a monumental thing for me because it was a shift, a major shift between, okay, I'm going to exert my will on you and you're going to do these things that I think you should do, because every parent thinks that's what they should do. I really believe that that's kind of the pattern we have. And then
it's such a pattern.
It is.
And it's all based in complete bullshit. Well, there is no proof at all anywhere that homework helps anything ever other than getting good grades. Well, other than passing a test. There's no proof that any of that stuff means anything.
I can say that he went through. He graduated from high school. He had a good time of the sports. And it was a big shift for us because we got along great from that, you know, little like crescendo. I always think back of it on it and kind of smiled. And I knew that he was a powerful being, right?
Yeah.
I can be pretty damn overbearing when I want to be, and think of that little 8-year-old, right? And he stood up to me, you know, in a way that was really made me just question my foundation of my life.
That's so cool. You know, I see my best friend Rob struggling to have his daughter do all this homework, which is just massive amounts of homework, and because he just believes that it's a good thing. But there's, you know, you just see that while they're wasting their time, they could be, there's fighting all the time. Not fighting, but I mean, there's this conflict going on all the time. They can't have friends over to the house. They can't go out to dinner. They can't do all these things they want to do. They can't go on the beach. They can't, I mean, they do a lot of things, but there's so much time involved in this homework. And this homework is just stuff that I ask her all the time. I said, what homework did you do a year ago? What were you studying a year ago? And she would say, I was in this one class. I said, okay, tell me everything you remember from that class. Nothing. She doesn't remember one thing from the class at all. Nothing at all. I said, okay, well, it was on history of European history. So who was this person? Who was this person? Who was this person? No idea. Yeah. It all just comes in. If you're not interested in something, you cannot retain it. You do not. You have to have the desire to learn for learning to sink in, and you have to do it at the right time.
I think.
And all this stuff that they're teaching. You know, but the only tough part about it is that no one is really sitting down and thinking about the ramifications of this one subject. They just think that everyone else is doing it, that they have to do it, and so therefore it has to be done. But no one's saying, well, why do they have to do homework? What's the purpose of this? You know, what is this going to do for them in their lives? It's robbing them completely of their childhood. 4 hours a night is robbing of their childhood every single night. No one's sitting down and saying,
try 6 or 7.
No one's going to say, you know, this just doesn't make any sense. This is just, you know, why is the child working so hard? You know, going to school all that time and then working it out. Why aren't they playing and enjoying life and figuring out who they are? They're just stuck in these roles. And I actually think that the system of education in the U.S. is designed to create workers for factories or workers or people that they fit into society that will be good and not, you know, not go overboard or not be a trouble to everyone. And I think it's dangerous, and I can't wait till it falls apart, because I think it will fall apart really quickly.
Well,
I'm with you, man. I was just watching, or I was researching some stuff when I was looking at schools for my oldest, and I found this blog from a mom who every year at the beginning of the year wrote an email to the teacher and to the principal until her kid was, I think, in high school, maybe middle school, but that her kid did not do homework. Kid just did not do homework. They had other things that they wanted to spend their time on, and that they went to the grocery store and learned math by budgeting and all of that. You know, that it's not that the kid was not learning, that he just did not sit down and do arbitrary worksheets, you know?
Yeah.
So I've gotten lucky in that I am in a position where our oldest is going to a private school that really understands what you were just talking about, Gary, that kids learn through doing, through finding what they're interested in and then exploring it at their own pace. And so I feel super fortunate. I do agree with you about the way that our system, public education, is set up, and I wouldn't be surprised if it did implode sooner rather than later, just like our system of government. It's all just kind of teetering on the edge at the moment, so we'll see what happens.
I don't agree about that with our government, but
you what?
I disagree about our government, but that's another discussion.
Yeah, sure.
Go to it's sudval.org, sudval.org. It's a Sudbury Valley School. And this is a school that's been around since the 60s. There's now like 140 of them all over the country, all over the world. And no teachers, no courses, no classrooms, no curriculum, no principal, no supervisors. There's just the kids and help adults that are there to help. Only
guides.
If they need help.
Are they,
guides,
are
they, right? Something like that. So the kid goes to school. They can do whatever they want to do. The kids make up the rules. The kids hire and fire the staff once a year. They have meetings, all that stuff. There's nothing. They don't have to do anything. They just do what they want to do. The kids don't have to learn how to read, don't have to learn how to do math, don't have to learn anything. But when they get the interest that they are interested in something, and then reading is required for that interest, then the kids learn how to read like that. And every kid that's gone through it, you'll just read it, watch it. It's just amazing how they just blossom and go to their fullest potential. It's just incredible.
Sounds a little bit like Children of the Corn.
And also,
Lord of the Flies, yeah.
Michael, don't bring Steve over to your dark side, okay? Silly jokes. I'm going to make a point. Anyway. No, it sounds like, or like, what's the other one? Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies, yeah.
One thing that they see is really interesting in this is that the kids naturally work together, and the older kids naturally help the younger kids, and the younger kids naturally seek out the guidance of the older kids, as opposed to a normal school where the 9th graders are afraid of the 10th graders, the 10th graders are afraid of the 11th graders. They're all segmented into classes. They don't mix with different grades. They don't get to know older kids or younger kids. The older kids are annoyed by the younger kids instead of trying to help them out. It's just this whole horrible situation, and all this negative stuff comes from this way that kids are placed in schools.
Or maybe it's perfect.
No. Okay, there is no wrong anywhere in the universe except for this one thing.
Well,
my favorite saying. I'm going to get t-shirts made. No wrong anywhere in the universe except for you.
As a somewhat related discussion, my son who was never, who takes forever with homework because he doesn't like it, and he was a creative soul. This week, he got a new English teacher this year, and this English teacher has brought in reading that actually is interesting to him. And he in particular, he read Harrison Bergeron by Kurt Vonnegut, and my son was inspired by it. He loved it. It related, in so many ways. He loved the story. He loved, and I happen to have loved Kurt Vonnegut at his age. He loved it so much that he actually wrote something as a one-page semi-parody of it. He presented it on his own to his teacher, was something he never, he never does extra credit. You can't get him to do his regular homework, no less extra credit. He and his teacher have so bonded on it. The teacher sent back some comments. He's going to probably publish it in the school literary magazine. And it kind of ties in with all of his, he said, I get all the symbolism and everything. And, he's very into symbolism because he likes films. And he likes films with symbolism. So, I said to my wife, look at this. All of a sudden, he might become a star student on the, at least in English, which is so unusual, compared to everything else he's been in. And, he may be finding his own path that way through his passions.
Through interest. Interest leads to passion. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And everything else that you're not interested in needs to be left alone. Because, and you'll get whatever you need to get out of those things you're interested in.
Right.
But I want to point out that I think it's really important that we just don't accept the status quo or the way things are done, and that we need to challenge ourselves. And it's easier for us because we understand, what Josh was talking about and how reality is set up and why we're here. And we're not here just to go to school, go to college, get a job, work all day, and then retire at 65. That's not what we're here to do.
Yeah, we're here to retire at 70.
And explore. And never to retire.
Yeah.
No retiring. No working.
Right. I think our advantage is that, we're in a position where we are able to think about what we want and focus on that. So, instead of settling for the status quo, it's not even that we have to challenge it, but we just have to not fight against it, just fight for what we want.
Well,
not even fight. It's not even fighting. That's the whole
right,
point.
Right, not fight for what we want, but just don't be pressured into doing things you don't want to do.
Hmm.
Just do what you want to do. Focus on doing what you want to do. If you have to do things, of course you have to do them, but do more of the things you want to do and less of the things that you don't want to do.
Right, and even then, make it into a game.
If you're doing something you have to do, make it as fun as you can make it.
And that was another thing that my son told me he was doing towards the end of the year. At the end of the year, he was on the verge of failing history. And at the end of the year, he started doing cartoons about the historical characters, which he likes telling stories, and he likes cartoons.
Right. That's cool.
All of a sudden, his grades went up. I said, "So, this year, so do that again." And I said, "And if there's any way you could incorporate that or some other fun element into science or math or whatever, do it."
Right.
Yeah.
I said, "Make it into a game. Make it into fun."
Yeah. Yep.
My daughter's going to college right now, and she's taking drawing and painting and Italian and just all these courses that she wants to take. It has no destination on the other side of it. It's just, I'm doing this because it's fun. So I think
that's cool. Yeah.
How's she liking your motorcycle?
She loves her motorcycle. It's so cute. I saw her drive off yesterday. It was like, oh, look at her.
Did you teach her to go on the sidewalk around the guard gate?
Yes, actually, I've unfortunately passed that bad habit on to her. But luckily, she doesn't seem to have the same issues I had with it. So there's been no ramifications, right?
The neighbor probably thinks it's cute.
Probably.
Yeah. as opposed to that, you know, that so-and-so finita.
Terrible.
Well, you guys, this was another fun show. How long has it been so far?
1 hour exactly. We're 7 seconds away.
How do I know that? I don't have a timer. I don't have anything. Mm. I just knew it. I was just told. Yep. What are you guys doing this weekend? Anything fun? You can take pictures of babies?
I am. I am taking pictures of babies all weekend long.
I'm doing my taxes, which is...
Oh, that should be fun.
Yeah.
We're going to see Weird Al tonight.
Oh, nice.
I love him.
That's cool.
Eat it. Eat it. I lost on Jeopardy, baby.
Okay.
You can put on your own show.
I could, but I'd be paying him so many royalties to be singing these songs that wouldn't be a moneymaker.
It's all about having fun, though.
Everyone who's listening to this show, all you 6 million people, feel free to ask a question or let us know what you want to talk about next week. Send us your comments. If you like Michael's joke, understood what that was earlier today, hotel, let us know.
All two of you.
2 out of 6 million is not bad.
Right.
And
sounds like a meatball song.
We're sending out this podcast in the email that used to come on Saturdays. Now it's coming on Sundays. So when you click on this by 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, it'll take you. I mean, if you're hearing us, you already figured this out. But I don't know why I'm saying this, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to tell Kyla that you have time to get this done and
you know what?
The potty.
I did that last week. I did get it done.
There you go.
Saturday night. And then what happened Sunday?
And then I used the one from the week before. So
yeah.
But this one is all fixed. I fixed it thanks to your pointing out my error.
Perfect.
So we should be good. Yep. And I'm going to finalize details on the Joshua Cruise, which will be in March, beginning of March.
Ooh.
And we'll talk about that next week.
Okay, cool.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right. So until next week, have a great time, and we'll see you guys on Joshua Live on Monday.
Perfect.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Have a great week, everybody.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
And scene.